It's Friday, February 3rd, and you're tuned into the Cleveland Baseball Talk Podcast. I'm Joe Noga, joined by Paul Hoynes. Hoynesy, it's that strange pseudo-holiday here in Cleveland that only happens in the coldest of wintry afternoons in January. It's truck day down at Progressive Field. A couple of tractor trailers being loaded with gear and uniforms and baseballs and bubble gum and bicycles and all sorts of things. If you can think of it, the Guardians are putting it on the truck and getting it ready to head down to Goodyear, Arizona to be unloaded for spring training in less than 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's always a great day, Joe. It means spring training's right around the corner, which means the regular season is getting a little bit closer. And it's I know it's cold outside, very cold outside, but it kind of warms your heart when the trucks pull out of Progressive Field heading toward Goodyear. That long, what is it, about a 3-day drive for those guys?
Yeah, Andrews Moving Services is traditionally who handles the driving and the transport, and they take about 3 days to get down there because they take their time and they do it right and make sure that everything gets there safely, and then they unload for a day and everything is in place and ready for these guys to come in and get going right away when the pitchers and catchers report around Valentine's Day. This year it was a little bit, it's sort of back to normal for the first time in like 3 years, because you forget the last couple of seasons you had a strike or a lockout that was, they didn't know when truck day was going to happen or if it was going to happen at what time. So they were sort of flying by the seat of their pants talking to the clubhouse manager, Tony Amato, today as we were standing on the loading dock, freezing our rear ends off. And, you know, before that you had COVID and pandemic situations to deal with. So this was like the first time since maybe 2018, 2019 that they had a traditional truck day where you just had all the stuff ready and the players had checked in before Tribe Fest and put their stuff out there. The front office people who were loading up their gear, that was all ready to go. And, you know, we just sort of stood on the loading dock, watching the clubbies and the workers sort of load things up. You're right. It does sort of warm your heart up, but you can't ignore the fact that it was pretty cold out there today.
The burning question is, Joe, did Tito Scooter get put on there?
You know what? I didn't see Tito Scooter there. It might still be in, he might still have it locked up back at his place, but
maybe he's driving it to Arizona.
Well, I mean, you know, lately he's been using the golf cart down there to get back and forth to places. So it's not like he really needs it out there anyways. And he's been walking around and getting around a lot better on his surgically repaired foot. So I got to believe that the hog is being taken care of somewhere. If it's not going on the truck, then it's definitely being looked after until Tito gets back here and can use it during the regular season.
Yeah, let's hope it didn't walk away again. Twice is one too many, I think. one too many times. So hopefully it's under lock and key somewhere.
Well, and that doesn't even count the time that Cash stole it and put it out on the infield for batting practice. So
that's right.
You gotta like that. But I just sort of like the tradition of truck days. Nobody wants to be there at 8:30 in the morning, standing on the loading dock, in the elements. But you know, traditionally, the reporters, the beat writers, it's just a time to get together and sort of commiserate and see each other for the first time in a few months or weeks. And we've missed that the last few years. We haven't had normal in because of the pandemic, because of the lockout. So just to get back there and see Tony Amato, Scotty, and the guys in the clubhouse who were working and trying not to get in their way, it was nice. It was fun. So hopefully more normal truck days are ahead for this club, and we'll be watching as they pull the tractors out onto the street here later on this afternoon and start that long journey that eventually ends with spring training. So looking forward to it. Not the only news of the day for the Guardians. They announced that Amanda Kamakona, former UCLA softball player, she played professionally. She's going to be hired as a hitting coach for the Arizona Complex League, and she's going to be working out there with young hitters in the Guardians organization. This is a big move for the Guardians, hiring a female coach.
Yeah, the first one in franchise history, as an on-the-field coach. You know, they've had female mental skills coaches and, that kind of stuff. But just, with kind of hands-on approach on the field as a coach, you know, working with, the team's hitters, young hitters. This is the first, and, I think she's well-qualified. I know I talked to James Harris last night, the assistant general manager and, former director of player development. He was really excited about, being able to hire her and looking forward to working with her. You know, she played 4 years at, Division I college at Cal State Fullerton for 2 years. Then she transferred to UCLA, where she, was all Pac-10 both years, All-American both years. And really, you look at her offensive numbers, she could hit the ball. So then she turned pro. She's also coached at the college level. Well-qualified and just, kind of, it continues a trend in Major League Baseball, Joe, where, they've made a concerted effort to, open the doors to, women interested in baseball careers on and off the field. And several teams have female coaches now.
Yeah, you look at the Yankees, famously, they hired Rachel Balcovic. She was an on-the-field coach, managing, actually, one of their minor league organization or franchises. And Bianca Smith with the Red Sox, she was involved, in coaching them as well. So you go as high as the Marlins hiring Kim Ng to be their general manager. I mean, there are women who are breaking down barriers and becoming the first. And we need to see more of that. Our friend Sarah Langs, who is on Twitter all the time, when you see another announcement like this, another coach, another opening that's being filled by a female in Major League Baseball or in organizations like this, her response is always, this is great. More, please. More of this. Let's see more of this. And as long as I can tell you one thing that I know, talking to coaches in the NFL, in the NBA, all the players care about is, can you make me better? Can you make me a better player on the field, more successful, so that I can win more, so that I can earn more? What can you do to make me better? They don't care if you're black, white, brown, male, female, or whatever. They care about, can this coach help me? And if Amanda Kamakona can come in there and develop young hitters, she can rise up and have a job in the majors someday, just as easily as anyone.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it, Joe. I mean, players want to get better. And if you can help them, like you said, it doesn't matter if you're male or female or black or white. They want advice. They want to know how to improve their skills. And, hopefully this is a step in the right direction, for Amanda and the Guardians and their players.
Yeah, it's a trend all through not just Major League Baseball, but through all sports. You know, we saw in Cleveland, Becky Hammon as a coach with the Cavaliers. We've seen the Browns hire female coaches as well. In fact, during the pandemic season, you had female coaches on the field coaching position groups. A step away from being the head coach at points during, times when other coaches were out with COVID. So, yeah, who knows how high this will go. And to echo what Sarah says, more, please. Let's see more of it. Definitely want to see it.
On the umpire and on the officials, too, Joe.
Oh, yeah.
female officials in the NFL and the NBA, you know, and college ball. I mean, it, you know, I don't think there's a female major league umpire. I don't even know if there's one in the minors, but, you know, that's probably coming too. We've had them before, and I would imagine that door will be open as well.
Yeah, I gotta believe that Major League Baseball is going to make a more of an effort now, seeing what the NBA has done, seeing the, you know, there's every time you look up during a Cavaliers game now, there's one, at least one female official on a crew, and you can't argue with, you know, just the need and the push to do more like this. So we're definitely seeing it as it's coming out. All right, more news for the Guardians, specifically player news. We saw via social media earlier this week, Richie Palacios, minor league outfielder who was one of the 17 players that made his major league debut. He was up and down several times last season with the big league club. Palacios announced that he has been invited to and is going to make the roster for the Netherlands. He will play for, you know, Team Netherlands in the World Baseball Classic. And, you know, just that goes to speak to the depth of the Guardians organization, because Richie Palacios, by playing in the World Baseball Classic, will probably cost himself a chance to make the opening day roster if some of these young guys can step in there and, you know, play well during his absence.
Yeah, for sure, Joe. And, you know, it's going to be a family affair. You know, his brother Josh is also made the club, you know, and right now they're going to start, they're scheduled to start in the outfield, both of them. So that's going to, but they're going to get some frequent flyer miles too. They opened the series in Taiwan. So I'm not sure when they're leaving, but they might be packing their bags right now. So, you know, that starts March 8th. They start that pool play with the Netherlands, Cuba, Italy, Panama, and Chinese Taipei starts on March 8th.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun to see, you know, a guy like Shohei Ohtani playing for Japan. We've talked at length about some of the just the star-packed rosters for teams like Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic and Venezuela. But Team Canada is also a team that Guardians players should be keeping their eye, or Guardians fans should be keeping their eye on, with Cal Quantrill now, you know, more than likely being a guy who's going to be on the roster.
Yeah, Cal Quantrill, you know, won 15 game winner last year, pitched 186 innings. You know, the wins and the innings were career highs. He made the, you know, two postseason starts against the Yankees. And then, you know, obviously a Canadian native, and his dad, you know, Paul Quantrill, is going to be on the coaching staff, Canada's coaching staff. So I would think it's pretty likely that Cal is going to pitch for that club. We don't know for sure. And it, you know, it certainly sounded like Bo Naylor, a Guardians catcher, would make the club or would play in for Canada if he made the roster. And we still haven't seen the official Canada's official roster, but, you know, I would think, you know, Quantrill and Bo Naylor are kind of locks for the Canadian team.
Yeah, Josh Naylor, again, still sort of giving himself some time and working back from the injury he suffered two seasons ago to his ankle. He actually turned down or said that he wouldn't be playing for Team Canada. Maybe in the future, you know, he wants to, but right now probably just wouldn't be the best thing for him. He sort of needs that time to work his way in during spring training, like on a normal sort of season that's, you're not playing in a, you know, a worldwide baseball tournament. So Team Canada, very interesting. Also very interesting to watch what's going on with the Dominican Republic, because there are so many Guardians players who would be eligible to be on that roster, the chief among them, Jose Ramirez. Everything I'm looking at, every roster projection has Manny Machado or Rafael Devers over at third base, which is Jose Ramirez's home. Even though he's the veteran, they might move Jose Ramirez to second base. Hoisey, what are your thoughts when you hear Jose Ramirez and second base for the Dominican Republic?
Joe, if this was 6 years ago, I'd have no problem with it. But if he's going to play second base now, you know, there's two concerns. A is his right thumb that he needed surgery on in November. Is that healed and can he swing the bat? And B, you know, he doesn't have the range he once did. And, you know, I playing second base, turning the double play, you know, if I'm the Guardians, I've got some concerns about that. But we also have to remember that last year they let him play in the home run derby when they knew he had a torn ligament in his right thumb. So, you know, I'm not, you know, if you know, talking to Terry Francona at Guard Fest and at the awards, you know, the Greater Cleveland Sports Awards banquet, he said Jose has been swinging the bat well. But, you know, this is going to be an interesting decision for the organization, whether they let him play or not.
You know, maybe they insist on him DHing in some of these games. And if that's the case, then I really don't have an issue with Jose Ramirez being on the roster, being active in those games. If he can DH every other game or, you know, work him in that way. But just. And let's throw it out there. What's everybody's concern? What comes to your mind? The first thing you think of, Jose Ramirez getting slid into and taken out at second base on a double play try. And, you know, and he misses, you know, 6 weeks or more with a sore knee or worse, has to have surgery. That's the giant concern. You don't want to speak it out loud because you don't want to see it happen. But, you know, this is your franchise right here. Right now, this is the face of your team. This is your leader, and you can't risk going into the season with him not fully healthy and playing second base. It that's where something could happen.
Yeah, great point, Joe. And that the pool play in Miami, where the Dominican Republic starts. You know, it's going to be heated. The Dominican, you've got Puerto Rico, you've got Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Israel. And just seeing Dominican, Puerto Rico, and Venezuela, you know, those are the three teams that, you know, annually play for the Caribbean World Series. You know, there's a lot of those are high stake games. And, you know, you've got a lot is on the line. And if you're, you know, you really. You know, I think your idea of having them DH him, you know, you could call your shots. If you're the Guardians and you let him go, you can make it clear to the Dominican coaching staff that, okay, we'll let him go, but he's got a DH. You know, we are not getting our guy, you know, banged up in the WBC here.
Yeah, and again, it's different than worrying about a pitcher being overtaxed. I mean, if they're concerned about Emmanuel Clase going, you know, that he's a guy who throws 100 miles an hour and, you know, big arm, you know, that kind of thing. If an injury is going to happen there, it could have happened anywhere. It could have happened during spring training too. But in spring training, in exhibition games, you're not leaving Jose Ramirez out there for a full nine innings playing second base and being exposed. I mean, he's playing like two or three innings and getting out typically in exhibition games where he would normally be at this time. So yeah, there's a lot of concern. Are they ready to take on this burden, this load that early in the spring where, you know, by March 8th, they're typically just easing into games at that point.
Yeah. And I think, you know, they've tried to stagger the reporting dates for spring training, you know, to make sure the WBC guys, you know, will get some extra work. The pitchers and catchers, I think, report on February 13th. You know, they start working out February 14th. A couple days later, the pitchers, you know, the position players that are going to, you know, participate, you know, come in. So it's not a whole lot of buffer, but, you know, you get the guys in there a couple days in advance. They get their physicals, they get some early work in before, you know, they start getting, you know, having to join their WBC teams. And another guy, you know, we didn't mention was Andrés Giménez is going to play shortstop for Venezuela. And that looks like, you know, pretty much a done deal. So You know, that's another guy you got to worry about. And a Gold Glove second baseman, you know, a guy that had a breakout season last year.
Right, exactly. A lot of people to sort of keep tabs on and stay worried about if you're Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff. Hey, before we get going today, wanted to mention Friday today and Saturday tomorrow, funeral services for John Adams, the longtime drummer and Indians and Guardians fan, who was really the symbol for Cleveland fans for so many years. Just the guy that everybody sort of looked to when you thought of a fan at Progressive Field, where he would sit at the top of the bleachers and bang his drum for nearly 50 years. A tremendous loss to the franchise, to the fan base, that Adams passed away earlier this week at age 71. Should be a very well attended and very emotional service for the wake today and the funeral tomorrow. Your thoughts on what to expect with John Adams and saying goodbye to him, basically, as Guardians and Indians fans.
Yeah, Joe, it's a tough day. I think, you know, as sick as John had been the last couple of years, we knew this day was coming. I thought the Guardians did a great job last year. You know, while he could enjoy it, you know, they inducted him into the Hall of Fame. You know, they put a bronze bench with his drum on it in Heritage Park. Joe, I was talking to Curtis Danberg with the Guardians. He said they're going to, you know, they have an audio of John Adams drumming. They're going to use it next year, you know, they'll on the scoreboard like they did in the postseason. So, I mean, his drumming and his memory will live on, but tough day for Guardians fans and the organization and John Adams' family today, for sure.
Yeah, you think about more than 3,700 games he attended. His family was so generous with him, and almost said, you know, him being an ambassador to fans everywhere and to the world for Cleveland fans, just the allowing him to just be at the ballpark as much as he was. And it was his second home. You think about it. At the old stadium, he met his wife there. I didn't even realize that. In reading some of these stories as we posted from the archives today, I didn't know that he and his wife Kathleen met in the bleachers at the old stadium and got married, you know, in 1978 after, you know, a couple years of courtship there. It's just really amazing. And some of his philosophies, he was quoted so many times in Plain Dealer stories just over the last 50 years. When there was the player strike in 1994, you know, he had been banging that drum for so many years at the old stadium, and they finally get a championship team in place, and then the strike cuts the season short. And the first thing that the newspapers wanted to ask was, you know, find the number one fan and ask him what he thinks about it. And he was a philosophizer. He quoted and just said, you know, baseball is still great and I love my team and that's why I'm here. Those are the kinds of things that he said. And he was always so generous and giving of his time. He had thoughts on when the team moved from the old stadium to Gateway back then when it was called that. Just reading through some of those really just, you know, made you think about how lucky we as fans here in Cleveland were to have such a great sort of symbol for us here to speak to the world about what it means to be a Clevelander and what it means to support your team.
Yeah, that was very well put, Joe. You know, he was part of it, part of the organization, part of the team, and most of all, like, part of the fans. You know, he was a fan. You know, that's, you know, more than anything else, he was a fan, and that brought him to all these games year after year after year. So, you know, what a legacy. And he certainly will be missed.
Yeah. Every time you walk past Heritage Park, you can see his bench and his drum bronzed there in the plaza, and you know, to stop and take a minute if you're a Guardians fan, to think about John Adams today and tomorrow. He will certainly be missed. All right, Hoynesy, that's going to wrap up this week and today's edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. We'll get back at it on Monday, and we'll talk to you guys then.